The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We are off and running on another program here right at the middle of the week. I guess we're almost near the end of this this week of broadcasting. As I said yesterday, we're just starting the semester for Armstrong College. So all of the classes are, I think, pretty much going strong. So it's good to be a part of that, and it's really a refreshing component to each day, just being able to stay grounded in some of this wonderful instruction that that God has given to His church over the years. And as I was telling my Principles of Living class this morning, when you think about that that textbook that we're able to use in that class, The Missing Dimension in Sex, I think the last version of that Mr. Armstrong was able to put together was in 1981, and then through a very turbulent period, and there were liberals in the church at the time when Mr. Armstrong's health wasn't the greatest, who were trying to do away with the United States and Britain and prophecy and bury the missing dimension in sex. And then, of course, we saw that same history repeat itself after Mr. Armstrong died. And as I was telling the students this morning in class, I mean, Satan's worked so hard to try to bury that truth, and we have to work even harder to keep it alive and to live it and to teach it. That's what we have to be grounded in. Jesus said, God's word is truth. It's truth. And there was this statement that they made, I believe this was from the late 1970s, some of those liberal ministers that said, you know, well, times have changed. And this book, it's a little bit outdated now, and so it's not, and it's expensive. You know, they always use that excuse after Mr. Armstrong died. But the changing times, you see the same kinds of excuses today. Well, we're changing. I mean, times are different, and we can't go back to that that absolute truth, that bedrock foundation on which the nation was established, in the case of the United States. And so it really is turning into a free-for-all. It's like it was at the end of the book of Judges, where it says every man did what was right in his own eyes, or what seemed right in his own eyes. And of course, there's a proverb that says, there's a way which does seem right to a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. That's Proverbs 14 and verse 12. And so as we see all of this fighting and this division and this strife and hatred in our nations, particularly now in the United States of America, it's important that we understand where this is leading. Where is this headed? This division, this kind of sharp division. A couple of months ago, we went through that piece, Victor Davis Hanson's piece. This was following the shooting at that that baseball field, that Bernie Sanders supporter that shot up all those Republicans. And Victor Davis Hanson came out with a piece asking if a divided America can even survive. And he recounted some important history, saying that we just barely survived the Civil War of the 1860s. I mean, America only barely survived that. And yet, as he said in his piece, you look at the growing divides today and the fact that they're surcharged by modern technology. Instant messages going out over social media, on the internet, 24/7 cable news. And of course, bitterly partisan in the media, in politics. Things are bad now, Davis Hanson said. But our history, our own history suggests that if we're not careful, they can get even worse. Things are bad now, but we better be careful. We better stop and take a deep breath, as he said in that column. Because what happens if it gets worse? Could something worse than the Civil War of the 1860s happen to the United States today? My father asked that in the latest program that he taped just yesterday. It hits the airwaves, I guess, next weekend. But he talks about something much worse coming upon our nation than even what America experienced in the 1860s. And he draws attention to the violence and the rioting and the protesting in Charlottesville, Virginia, last weekend, and all of the division that's come from that in the days that have followed. Here's a sampling. This is clip number 6.
The violence and rioting in Charlottesville, Virginia, has gotten worldwide attention. And there was one lady killed and about 20 others wounded. And anybody in the world practically can look at America and see that this nation is deeply divided. Deeply divided. And that in itself is a grave danger. But there is an invisible danger, far greater than that, that people do not see.
And so the first danger there that he talks about is that which comes from without. Look at the nations that, well, we've had our conflict even here recently with North Korea. They see what's happening in the United States. It's all over the world. The news is, I mean, it's headline news here in Europe as well, here in the UK. And Theresa May's come out with a statement. Angela Merkel, you heard probably earlier in the week, denouncing this neo-Nazi violence, these demonstrations going on in the heart of America. I mean, in some ways, with respect to America's allies, it's shocking. But then America's enemies, I mean, they're mocking and ridiculing the United States. What must they be thinking in Iran? There's dangers from without, and as he goes on to say in that same recording, there's dangers from within as well, clip 7.
And do we see the danger in how bitterly we are divided today in America? Do we see the real danger of all this? Do we have to experience another civil war, which would be probably about 10,000 times worse? And what is going to happen to this land then? What is going to happen? We need to know how to solve this crisis.
Are we going to experience another civil war? There's quite a few voices, prominent voices, calling for that, in fact. Really, they're calling for their side to take up arms. What happened in Charlottesville, I mean, that's just that's a tiny, tiny sampling of what's coming. Again, Victor Davis Hanson said, look, we barely made it through the Civil War of the 1860s. But do we really see the danger in all of this? One of the points that my father makes in that program that he taped yesterday, as I say, you can see this next weekend all over the world on television, and of course we'll have it posted at thetrumpet.com next Friday, a week from tomorrow. But one of the points that he brings out in that particular program is just how much worse it will be this time around. And what happens when you have prominent officials calling for violence to solve the problems of this world? He says those that oppose the United States, or rather the U.S. government, those that oppose the Trump administration, and you see a lot of that on both sides of the aisle right now, it's frightening, really. It seems almost like this nightmarish mob mentality. But as he brought out in that taping yesterday, they think, I mean, those who resist, those who fight against the current administration, they think it's just a matter of bringing down a president. They think it's just a matter of bringing down one individual. But as he discussed in his taping yesterday, what is it doing to the United States? What is it doing to America? What is it doing to the entire nation? These are dangerous times. And the hatred level, it's escalating on both sides, as I covered with you yesterday. One last snippet from yesterday's taping. This is clip 8.
The Charlottesville violence is an example that we need to learn from, because Satan works in this, in the hate of any people. God says we're to love even our enemies. But we hate our enemies, and we hate our friends if they don't think the way we do, and we get rid of them. And people have uncontrollable emotions. That's how Satan works on them. He works on those moods and feelings and emotions. And we need God's power.
He alludes to Ephesians 2 in verse 2 there, where it says Satan is the prince of the power of the air. Go and read what Herbert Armstrong had to say about that passage in Mystery of the Ages. How that Satan broadcasts. He broadcasts in attitudes, moods, impulses. And what you saw in that footage from last Saturday, that was a lot of Satan's attitude. Pure and simple. His attitudes, his impulses, his moods. He is really capitalizing on the hatred that you see on all sides. Yes, indeed, it is on all sides. We're not here to pick any side, to hold up any side as an example, as a model of what we should be. As I read to you yesterday from Romans 3, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We are all guilty. And that's why we need God's power. That's why we need the love of God. My father quoted heavily in that taping yesterday from Abraham Lincoln and his House Divided speech. Lincoln, of course, drawing on the Gospels, drawing on the statements of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ, who said every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. He said every house that's divided against itself shall not stand. As I say, I mean, my father said that people think they're just bringing down one individual, one president. In fact, they're bringing down America. You look into the meaning there. That's from Matthew 12:25, the meaning of desolation. Division leads to desolation, and in Thayer's lexicon, that means to lay waste, to ruin, to reduce to nothing. That's how bad it is. That's where it's leading. If we're divided against ourselves, we will come to desolation unless we do something to solve the problem, unless we learn the lesson of Charlottesville. In fact, the greatest danger that we're facing is from within. And even Abraham Lincoln said as much. He knew that back in the 1860s, a period that the United States barely survived, as Victor Davis Hanson writes. We barely survived it. And Lincoln knew it. If we don't fix this, if we don't learn the lesson from this division, we won't make it. We won't make it. We won't survive. Well, you can look at other passages in the New Testament. I think that kingdom divided, I think that kingdom divided statement is repeated in two of the other Gospels as well. And so God repeats it over and again. He says, I want for you to get this. God really emphasizes this point. If you have a divided nation, if you have a divided household, if you have a divided family, if you have a divided world, it's not going to stand. And furthermore, who's behind the division? That's what my father got into yesterday. Again, you can look at that program next Friday at thetrumpet.com. Let me just take you through a few verses we've gone through quite often. Revelation 12. Revelation 12 and verse 7, where it talks about the fight. Michael and his angels fighting against the dragon, Satan the devil, and his demons. A great war in heaven. One that happened in this end time, these latter days. It says Michael prevailed and cast that great dragon down to this earth. It says in verse 8 that the dragon prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. What that means is that Satan is now confined to this earth, along with his demons. And as my father has said over and again, if that's the case, if that has happened, and we believe it happened in 1986, if that has happened, what does it mean for the people of this world today? What does it mean for the people of God? I mean, look at the target that we are. And the nations of Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh, the United States and Britain, little Judah in the Middle East. These are mighty big targets in the eyes of the devil. And he's here. He's confined to this earth along with his demons. Verse 9 says, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So Mr. Armstrong's death in 1986, he was the prophesied end time Elijah, came in the spirit and the power of Elijah of old. And upon his death, we saw the end of an era and the beginning of another era, a Laodicean era, a lukewarm era. That was a great turning point in this world and in God's church. 1986, we entered into a period of no more delay. Satan is filled with wrath. It says that he knows he has but a short time. Look at verse 12. It says, woe to the inhabitants of the earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath because he knows that he has but a short time. He knows his time is about up. And so he's stirring up this red-hot rage and anger and hatred and division. He knows he has but a short time, and he's been cast to this earth, and he's confined to this earth. And God is trying to get our attention because God has allowed all of this to happen. And this is why we see crisis after crisis after crisis. I mean, Victor Davis Hanson's piece is just, it's just 2 months old. And he was saying back in mid-June, hey, listen up, everyone. We need to take a deep breath here and exhale and come together. President Trump said as much on Saturday night. We need to come together here. We need to work as one. But it's not working, is it? There's just one incident. There's just one crisis. There's just one tragedy after another. I want to take you through some history that my father's talked about in recent years, beginning in particular with America Under Attack and continuing in Great Again, his most recent booklet, which we published earlier this year, I believe. But to set that up, let me first play a clip for you. This is from a Key of David program in 2011. Originally, it was from a personal appearance campaign, a message my father gave up in Toronto, Canada. This is clip number 9.
You can see in verses 7 through 9, I'll just let you maybe look at those later if you'd like, but Satan has been cast down in this end time. He's been cast down. And God says there's no place for him anymore except on this earth. Now, he was cast down once before when he was given rule over this earth. But God says, I've cast him down. He only has access to the earth. And it's going to be quite a test for people. And I tell you, that has everything to do with what you see in that radical left. If you think Satan isn't great at mesmerizing and hypnotizing people, you don't know the devil. He has all kinds of power, and when he concentrates on nothing but this earth, let me tell you, it's going to be a hard, hard time. And let me just tell you this, if you think I'm wrong, you wait and see what happens. I'm telling you, this land is under a curse, America's under a curse, Britain's under a curse, and it's not going to get better. I mean, it's really about to fall totally apart.
That's from 2011. That's 6 years ago. And there he is telling telling trumpet readers from the Toronto, Canada region that if you don't, you know, if you think I'm wrong, you just wait and see what happens. And now look at the rise of the radical left today. I mean, they're coming away from the crisis this past Saturday looking better than ever. Over and again, you have one news report after another that says they're the, you know, they were resisting against the fascists. They don't even call them Antifa. They just said, hey, they're the neo-Nazis on the one hand, and then those resisting the neo-Nazis. It was all justified. And President Trump, as I covered with you yesterday and the day before, he's a Nazi sympathizer because he said there he had the audacity to say that there was fault on both sides. But you listen to one report after another as they talk about the Nazis on the one hand, evil through and through, to be sure. And then those on the other hand, righteous, judging by the coverage in the major media, righteous for standing firm against the neo-Nazi movement. In fact, what we're seeing is this astronomical rise of the radical, violent left, the Marxist revolutionaries. And if you look at the previous administration, that's an administration that accommodated this movement. Just look at last year, even, as Hillary Clinton was campaigning and Barack Obama, and they were offering full support to the Black Lives Matter movement, Antifa. I mean, the president, before he was out of office, President Obama, I mean, he was inviting in the leaders from those black organizations, the Black Panther-like organizations, right into the White House. And then all of the violence that the major media has worked so hard to just carefully conceal, attacking Donald Trump supporters, assaulting a college Republican at Cornell, all of the violence on Inauguration Day. This is a presidential Inauguration Day in the United States, lighting trash cans on fire, punching a white supremacist who's being interviewed on TV. That's the way you counter this movement, this Trump movement, the way that they see it. You burn things, you riot, you take to the streets, you commit violent acts. And we've been seeing it all through this year. Antifa setting fire to buildings in Berkeley, preventing conservative speakers from speaking, preventing political scientists from speaking, like Charles Murray. Ann Coulter was threatened with violence if she spoke at Berkeley. And then you have the law enforcement come in and basically shut it down. Heather McDonald, she was blocked from speaking at an auditorium in Claremont, California. That was in April. Then you had the Virginia shooting, June 14th. And Victor Davis Hanson saying, you know, look, we need to take a deep breath here. This is out of control. Peter Beinart had this piece. I mentioned this yesterday because Melanie Phillips referred to it in her email alert. But this is a pretty revealing piece at The Atlantic. And it was written and produced before the latest explosion of violence in Charlottesville. And this is an article about the rise of the violent left, exactly what my father was talking about in that last clip I just played. These Antifa activists, Beinart says, since 1907, Portland, Oregon has hosted an annual Rose Festival. Since 2007, the festival had included a parade down 82nd Avenue. Since 2013, the Republican Party of Multnomah County, which includes Portland, had taken part. This April, so this is this year, this April, all of that changed. In the days leading up to the planned parade, a group called the Direct Action Alliance declared fascists plan to march through the streets and warned Nazis will not march through Portland unopposed. The alliance said it didn't object to the Multnomah GOP itself, but to fascists who plan to infiltrate its ranks. Yet it also denounced marchers with Trump flags and red MAGA hats who could, quote, normalize support for an orange man who bragged about sexually harassing women and who is waging a war of hate, racism, and prejudice. So as I read to you yesterday, it's whoever it is, they determine to be racist. And of course, they have determined that Donald Trump is a racist, even before all of this with Charlottesville. It says a second group, Oregon Students Empowered, created a Facebook page called Shut Down Fascism, No Nazis in Portland. It says next, the parade's organizers received an anonymous email warning that if Trump supporters and others who promote hateful rhetoric marched, we will have 200 or more people rush into the parade and drag and push those people out. So they threatened. They threatened the organizers of the parade. It says, when Portland police said they lacked the resources to provide adequate security, the organizers canceled the parade. It was a sign of things to come. And so we're seeing this play out over and again. It's being repeated across the United States. The Antifa movement issuing these threats, saying that we're bringing in hundreds, and Herbert Armstrong was right on this back in the 50s. This is not some spontaneous protest. This is organized. This is organized. There are leaders behind it. There are wealthy organizations sponsoring it. It says, for progressive, Donald Trump is not just another Republican president. 76% of Democrats, according to a Suffolk poll from last September, consider him a racist. So an overwhelming majority of the Democratic Party consider Donald Trump to be a racist. I mean, this is according to a poll from last September. Forget about this week. Never mind what happened over the weekend. This is last year. This is even before the election. He is a racist. He's a racist. And I'm sure they weren't thinking that back when he was, you know, a popular host on a television program 10, 12 years ago. But now something's different. Now, I mean, a lot has changed. What has happened? It says last March, according to a YouGov survey, 71% of Democrats agreed that his campaign contained fascist undertones, all of which raises a question that is likely to bedevil progressives for years to come. If you believe the president of the United States is leading a racist, fascist movement that threatens the rights, if not the lives, of vulnerable minorities, how far are you willing to go to stop it? And you have more and more of these prominent leaders in this movement calling for violence. Calling for violence, and they feel justified by doing so because, after all, the United States is being led by a racist, fascist administration. Now Charlottesville, and you just throw a whole lot more fuel on the fire. It says in Washington, D.C., the response to that question centers on how members of Congress can oppose Trump's agenda, on how Democrats can retake the House of Representatives, on how and when to push for impeachment. But in the country at large, some militant leftists are offering a very different answer. On Inauguration Day, a masked activist punched the white supremacist leader, Richard Spencer. Well, it talks about some of these other things. I gave you a little bit of a rundown a moment ago. Open violence, taking violence to the streets. It's happening all over the United States. The article explains how that with the election of Donald Trump, this movement, again, which the previous administration offered praise for, this movement has experienced explosive growth since the election of Donald Trump. You have an overwhelming majority that believe the United States is headed up by a racist, fascist movement, and that it's threatening the rights, if not the lives, of vulnerable minorities. That's what they believe. This is not some fringe group. This is a group now, particularly after last weekend, that has the not-so-subtle support of the major media and many politicians in the Democratic Party as well. According to New York City Antifa, the group's Twitter following nearly quadrupled in the first 3 weeks of January alone. Trump's rise has also bred a new sympathy for Antifa among some of the mainstream left. Suddenly, noted the Antifa-aligned journal, it's going down, anarchists and Antifa, who have been demonized and sidelined by the wider left, have been hearing from liberals and leftists, you've been right all along. This is Peter Beinart's article, The Rise of the Violent Left. Suddenly there's those in the main of the left-wing movement that are saying to Antifa, you're right. You've been right all along. You've been right to call Trump a fascist. Now we know. Our worst fears have been realized. It says these responses sometimes spill blood. Since Antifa is heavily composed of anarchists, its activists place little faith in the state, which they consider complicit in fascism and racism. They prefer direct action. They're anarchists. They want anarchy. They want to bring down the system. And so this article goes on to talk about all of the action, quote unquote, that they've taken. They pressure employers to fire them and landlords to evict them. This is the quote I read yesterday embedded within Melanie Phillips' piece. It says, and when people they deem racist and fascist manage to assemble, Antifa's partisans try to break up their gatherings, including by force. That's what happens. And it happened to some degree on Saturday, but it's happened before that in multiple places all over the U.S. It says such tactics have elicited substantial support from the mainstream left. When the masked Antifa activist was filmed assaulting Spencer on Inauguration Day, another piece in The Nation described his punch as an act of kinetic beauty. Slate ran an approving article about a humorous piano ballad that glorified the assault. Twitter was inundated with viral versions of the video set to different songs, prompting the former Obama speechwriter Jon Favreau to tweet, I don't care how many different songs you set Richard Spencer being punched to, I'll laugh at every one. This is the reaction that the left had to violence in the streets. This is great. This is something we should applaud. This is something that we should laugh at. This is something that's justified. And the violence isn't just directed at avowed racists like Spencer, as Beinart says in his piece. It talks about others, too. Their main target, as Melanie Phillips said earlier this week, is really the conservative movement. Those that want to uphold the Constitution of the United States. Anti-fascists call such actions defensive. Hate speech against vulnerable minorities, they argue, leads to violence against vulnerable minorities. So they're just defending themselves. And he goes on and talks about how that Donald Trump, many of Donald Trump's supporters, are retaliating. They're beginning to fight back. And, of course, you have the extremes on both sides, both extremes on display last Saturday in Charlottesville. Let me just get to the conclusion here. It says here, this is Peter Beinart's piece at The Atlantic, the September issue, The Rise of the Violent Left. And he concludes by saying, Antifa believes it is pursuing the opposite of authoritarianism. Many of its activists oppose the very notion of a centralized state. But in the name of protecting the vulnerable, anti-fascists have granted themselves the authority to decide which Americans may publicly assemble and which may not. Think about that. They've taken it upon themselves to decide who can assemble in public and who cannot. This is in the United States of America. That authority rests on no democratic foundation, Beinart says. Unlike the politicians they revile, the men and women of Antifa cannot be voted out of office. Generally, they don't even disclose their names. Antifa's perceived legitimacy is inversely correlated with the government's, which is why in the Trump era, the movement is growing like never before. As the president derides and subverts liberal democratic norms, progressives face a choice. They can recommit to the rules of fair play and try to limit the president's corrosive effect. This is a liberal writing. He's against Trump too, but he at least has his eyes open wide enough to see what's behind the Antifa movement. They can recommit to the rules of fair play and try to limit the president's corrosive effect, though they will often fail, or they can, in revulsion or fear or righteous rage, try to deny racists and Trump supporters their political rights. From Middlebury to Berkeley to Portland, the latter approach is on the rise, especially among young people. Especially among the younger generation. When we come back, we'll look at another disturbing piece that was in the Washington Post the other day. Another leader in the black community that's calling upon this movement to take up arms, to resort to violence, to correct the wrongs that he sees in American society. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments or suggestions to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Both political parties in the U.S. will have some people who dislike or perhaps hate the Constitution, but it seems like today most of those people come from what we call the radical left and don't have a good opinion of the Constitution of the United States at all. Now, is there a problem with that, and what does it all mean? If people hate the Constitution and want to do away with it, is that a big problem, or is it nation-destroying, as many people believe? What is it going to produce? The Constitution itself says that it is the supreme law of the land. The supreme law of the land. Now, if you do away with the supreme law of the land, as some are saying we should do, well, what is that going to bring? Is it going to bring anarchy and chaos? And is it really dangerous to this entire land and to everybody who lives here in America. If you look at the Old Testament and our forefathers in the book of Joshua and Judges, it's all really one book, and it says there at the very end that every man did that which was right in his own eyes. He didn't have a law to look to. And everybody just made up their mind how they were going to live and what they were going to do. And just after that, Israel was conquered. So what kind of leadership can you possibly have if you don't have some law and somebody there to implement the law?
That's from my father's Key of David program back in February 2013, a little over 4 years ago. Abandon the Constitution. What happens? What happens when you do away with the supreme law of the land? What happens when the laws of the land begin to break down and the people turn to anarchy, every man doing what seems right in his own eyes? Judges 21 and verse 25. That's what happened. And then, of course, after that, well, you have the enemies from without that begin to see all of the vulnerabilities, that begin to see the weakness and the sickness from within. If you don't have the law and somebody there implementing the law, you are in grave danger. Now, you think about this op-ed piece. This was in the Washington Post. It's by an associate professor at Johns Hopkins University. This is a university professor. N.D.B. Connolly is his name. And the title of the piece from Tuesday is that Charlottesville showed that liberalism can't defeat white supremacy. Only direct action can. And what does he mean by direct action? He means violence. He means violence. And the Washington Post offered its pages as a platform for this black leader to call on Antifa and other groups like it to resort to violence. He says the white nationalist riot in Charlottesville, a city that boasts diversity, makes us stronger, made a lot of things clear. One of them is that generic solutions to the racial problem, bland affirmations of inclusiveness, tolerance, and free speech will no longer work. Indeed, they have never worked. And so he goes through some history, at least the way he sees the history. And he says the only way that it's worked in the past is when we've resorted to violence. That's the only way we've gotten what we've wanted. He uses the analogy of the rock, paper, scissors game. We've been using paper too long. We've got to bring the rock. This weekend's White Power March in Charlottesville and the march's attendant terrorist attack reminded the country of the persistence of white supremacy, our country's scissors. Right at the country's founding, racists cut black and indigenous peoples out of the liberalism's contract. Resistance, he says, be it forceful or clandestine, threatened or explicit, stands as our rock. I mean, this is what's going to solve our grievances. This is how we address our grievances. Forceful resistance. He says rocks can look like armed self-defense or nonviolent direct action campaigns. They appear, too, as blunt, bald public speech about the hatred arrayed against the dispossessed. He says further on, it has certainly included the countless thousands who lost their lives speaking out and challenging white supremacy everywhere. If we have to die, so be it. It's time to bring the rock. He says a half century ago, nothing less than radical anti-racism could reduce white supremacy to an outlaw religion. Then, in April 1968, this is further on, skipping a thought in the middle, it says, amid a flurry of other rocks, riots shook American cities following the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. It took that rolling unrest, not the promise of further economic growth, to spur President Lyndon Johnson and Congress to action. So the way he sees it is that it took the violent rioting following the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. for the black community to get what it wanted. Segregationists have again assumed their pedestals in the Justice Department, the White House, and many other American temples. This is today now. This is 2017. This is an op-ed piece in the Washington Post saying that we've now got segregationists, we've now got racists in the Justice Department. We've got them in the White House. We've got them in many other American temples. And so we've got to do what we've done in the past. We've got to do what we did in the 60s. Paper alone won't drive them out. Start throwing rocks. Start throwing rocks. That is a call to arms. That's a call for revolution. And that's in the op-ed pages of the Washington Post, if you can believe it. Well, if you've listened to this program or read our literature, you can believe it. You can believe it because of what we have been saying for decades, what the Bible prophesies. I went through it yesterday with you, Ezekiel 4 and 5, some of it anyway, Isaiah 1. But let me play a clip for you from my father's Key of David program. This is from 2014, where he's going through some of the material from Herbert Armstrong, talking about the communist influence in the United States of America. He's talking about what Mr. Armstrong said back in the 1950s and where this was leading. This is clip number one.
I want to read you something that Herbert W. Armstrong wrote way back in 1956, which is not exactly what I'm talking about, but it gives you an insight into the kind of warfare that's going on against America. Notice what Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1956, and I'll just quote it to you. A psychological warfare of propaganda, infiltration, subversion, demoralization that is coming upon America, he said. That is the goal of the communist. At least he certainly believed that at the time, and so do I. But they were inflicting that kind of warfare. He continues by saying, it is a warfare that has attacked our minds and moral and spiritual values rather than our bodies and our earthly possessions. He said it's a kind of warfare we don't understand or know how to cope with. It uses every diabolical means to weaken us from within, sapping our strength, perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, demoralizing our armed forces, and finally, after such infiltration, overthrowing our government by force and violence.
That last statement in particular, that's the end goal. After infiltration, overthrowing the government by force and violence. Now you go back to that Washington Post piece. He says, look, the racists are back in control in the White House, in the Justice Department. They are up on their pedestals. The white supremacists are calling the shots. They're leading the government. And so we've got to overthrow the government. Paper alone won't drive them out. Start throwing rocks. Now, Mr. Armstrong was talking about this in 1956. The goal, the end goal of the communists. Look now, please, at the problems America is facing today. My father says in his booklet, Great Again, that all this whole movement, it's all clearly disguised as a harmless political party. Well, we're just Democrats. We just want fairness. We just want justice. That's all. We just don't want racists in control. That's all. We just got to resist against the white supremacists. And it's not just this tiny little movement that, as Andrew Miller covered at thetrumpet.com this week, has fewer members than the Flat Earth Society. This is something that's spread all across government today, thanks to the election of Donald Trump. In fact, the implication is there that all 63 million people who voted for Donald Trump are infected by this racist virus. And so how do we solve it? Well, I mean, paper alone certainly not doing it. So we've got to start throwing rocks. In Great Again, my father says the radical left and its Marxist ideas have gained control of the Democratic Party. That's why you see so much sympathy for movements like Antifa from the Democratic Party and from the Democratic wing of the major media, which is also about 95% of the media. They have sympathy for these Marxist revolutionaries. And all they're going on about this week is that Donald Trump has sympathy for the white supremacist movements. They're looking for the speck in someone else's eye, and they don't see the beam in their own, as Jesus said in Matthew 7. It's a dangerous and toxic mix leading to an explosion, as we keep saying. My father wrote in Great Again, communists first corrupt, pollute, and agitate from within, but their final phase is a violent overthrow of the government. I mean, can you see this building? Look at what's in the op-ed pages of the Washington Post just this week. A Johns Hopkins associate professor. Violent overthrow of the government, he says. They aim to destroy the system because they can't build another one until that happens. He says the communist attack from within America is far more significant than you may realize. We are staring it in the face today. We're staring it right in the face. My father describes again in one of his previous programs the extent of this problem, this division, this hatred and strife. This is from a December 2012 Key of David program, Satan Cast Down, clip number 3.
Today we see on television and hear on radio racist remarks just frequently. Now, if you stop and think about that, I mean, they're just flying all over the place. What is just the natural outcome of that? If you're going to use a little psychology here, well, the natural outcome of it is race riots and race wars. I wonder if we know what is really happening in our country and in other countries, but especially the U.S. What is really happening? Is that because Satan has been cast down? Do you think it might have anything to do with that? Well, I think if it's already happened, we'd be naive not to think that. And I'm going to show you that it has already happened. It has already happened, and anybody can prove it. But look, when you start talking about people like that and you don't have any proof, which most of them don't, they just spout out the words, well, then you're filling your country with hatred and division that leads to, well, civil war. And violence galore. Do we understand what is happening on this earth? And do we know why it's that way? Well, I'll tell you, a major part of it is because Satan has been cast down now. And he's full of wrath because he knows he has but a short time. He isn't going to be able to operate very long, so he's just as enraged as he could possibly be, or more so than he ever has been.
That's the root cause, Revelation 12, as we covered earlier. But our country is being filled, speaking of America, it's being filled with hatred and division, and it's leading to desolation, like Jesus prophesied. In his Great Again booklet, my father quotes Mr. Armstrong also, as saying this again, this Marxist revolutionary movement. He says if it could do it peaceably at the polls, it would, but it knows it can't. So it does stand for the violent overthrow of the United States government. Here again, an op-ed piece at the Washington Post just this week, 2 days ago. Paper alone won't drive them out. Start throwing rocks, people. Start resorting to violence, people. Well, we don't have time to go through more from great again, but look at Ezekiel 5, 8, and 9, and also Isaiah 1 and verse 4 again to see where this is leading. There's a spirit behind it. Let me, though, conclude with one clip from Herbert Armstrong. This is something he said back in 1979, clip 5.
Now, Satan has a kingdom. He's the god of the world, and he's the invisible ruler of the world, and the whole world is under his sway. By God's permission. Satan can't do anything God does not permit, because high above all rule is that of God, and God is permitting certain things for a reason that we learn by experience. All right, Jesus said, if a kingdom be divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand, and that's a good thing to remember. If the United States gets divided too much between the idea of freedom and the idea of communism, this country could not stand. I'm glad the communists are in the minority.
Well, that's Herbert Armstrong from many years ago, saying he was glad the communists are in the minority. Today, as my father brings out in Great Again, these Marxist ideas have gained control of the Democratic Party and its prominent leaders, its most prominent voices, so many of them, are now calling for resistance. They're calling for rocks. They're calling for violence. They're moving to oust this president, the current president of the United States of America. There's a lot more that we could get into, but we've just run out of time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you again tomorrow.